I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Now we have Democrats and judges undermining the will of voters at every turn. Also, we'll have some exclusive reporting on the release of mass murderer Timothy Pawley. And finally, President Donald Trump really doesn't like a particular painting of him that's hanging up in Colorado. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We had one initiative of the people that survived the vote in November. It was the initiative to protect natural gas. It was the only one that Democrats couldn't really fiddle with on the ballot, by putting some line in there that said, if you don't pass this, then, or if you pass this, then we'll defund childhood cancer research or something like that. So this one was fairly straightforward. It's like, do you want to keep natural gas in your home and business or don't you? I-2066. And this was the only one that passed in November. And of course, Democrats won't let anything survive that they don't support. So we already knew that it passing in November wasn't going to be the end of the fight to protect natural gas in your home and businesses. And it turns out that the only initiative to survive is no longer surviving up to this point. So a King County Superior Court judge, her name is Sandra Whidlin, she has ruled it essentially unconstitutional. And gosh, don't we already suspect this? Every time voters pass an initiative that Democrats don't like, they find a way to upend it. So now they found this King County Superior Court judge, Sandra Whidlin, who ruled that, it had too many things going on with it. It's not constitutional. And so she has basically thrown it out. So maybe that's not so much of a surprise to people who see how things operate in Washington state. But I will tell you, even knowing how biased the judiciary in this state can be, this one has such a web of deception and corruption. It's unreal. So let me try to unravel it for you. So maybe not a surprise, Judge Whidlin is an Inslee appointee. He appointed her in 2018. But again, not so much of a surprise. Jay Inslee was in office for 12 years. And he has a lot of appointments that he's made to benches. And so just by virtue of a judge being appointed by Jay Inslee, I wouldn't say that means that they can't make a fair ruling. But there's a lot more going on here. So as you know, Jay Inslee has a particular tie to Initiative 2066. He hates it. Because when he was in office, he was a climate governor, and this was an attack on his climate agenda. He said all sorts of nasty things about Let's Go Washington and the people who supported these initiatives and the initiative to keep natural gas. And so as soon as that initiative passed in November, Governor Inslee came out. He was still the governor at the time. And what did he say? Well, he basically said, we're going to challenge it. We do not want it to stand.
There is concern about that initiative. It's very important to preserve the initiative process, to respect the initiative process. And questions have been raised whether this was a defective initiative that really was not fair to voters because it did not adequately describe what it really was. And I think there is a very good chance that the court will find that it was defective by violating the single subject rule and therefore will not be actually go into effect. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's always interesting how our process works. They don't determine whether it's defective or it can stand legally until after people vote on it. Doesn't it seem like that's a process they should go through before it ends up on the ballot for voters? But no, they work all that out after the fact. So here you have a governor who doesn't support the initiative because he's the one who pushed the policy to upend natural gas in your homes and businesses, which will cost people tens of thousands of dollars to electrify their home. So he feels very confident the day after the election that it will not stand. And maybe he feels so confident because he knows that he has appointed quite a few judges and that it's likely to land in front of one of them. But there's even more to this. So this case that Inslee has a particular stake in goes in front of a judge that he appointed, a judge that rules against it with Jay Inslee in the courtroom. Think about that. So the governor who gave you your job is sitting in the courtroom, wants you to strike down this initiative that flies in the face of his climate agenda, and you're more than happy to oblige. Now, one could say, well, you know, this judge can make a decision independently, and he just happened to be there, and that doesn't mean that she felt compelled to have to throw the initiative out. Oh, the web of deception gets even deeper than that, even more tangled. Because not only did Jay Inslee appoint her to her seat as a King County Superior Court judge, and not only was Jay Inslee in the courtroom while she ruled against an initiative that he hated, but this judge also donated to Jay Inslee's campaign for governor. Gee, does that seem fair and above board to all of you? Sandra Whitland, 2 years before Jay Inslee appointed her to the bench, donated to his campaign for governor. And not only to Jay Inslee's campaign, you'll see on that same list, she also donated to the campaigns of a lot of other Democratic politicians who ended up opposing Initiative 2066, just a few I see on that list. Monica Dhingra, yeah, she's one of the people who supported moving away from natural gas. Dow Constantine, 43rd District Democratic Party, the who's of Democrats in Olympia who support tearing your natural gas away. Bob Ferguson, who of course was opposed to the initiatives, she donated to his campaign back when he was Attorney General. So clearly this judge has some biases, right? So in case you're keeping track, when she wasn't a judge, she donated to Jay Inslee's campaign for governor. 2 years later, he turns around and appoints her to a bench on King County Superior Court. Voters pass Initiative 2066 to protect natural gas. Jay Inslee says, we're gonna overturn this in a court of law. It ends up in front of a judge who he gave her seat to after she donated to his campaign. He's actually in the courtroom while she overturns it and rules it unconstitutional. And she also donated to a bunch of Democrats who also oppose the initiative that she ruled against. It gets even worse. Don't worry, it gets even worse than that. So this isn't a done deal, of course. This is a lower court, and so this is going to go through the appeals process. And we already know BIAW and the other interested parties, we're going to hear from BIAW on this tomorrow, the Building Industry Association of Washington, they're going to continue to fight this. Well, this is going to end up before the appellate court, where the acting chief judge is a woman named Cicely Hazelrig. Okay, what's the problem there? Well, Cicely Hazelrig is another person who this King County judge donated to. Oh yeah, King County Superior Court Judge Sandra Whitland's been very busy. So the case she just ruled on is going to be sent to a court where the acting chief judge is someone who Sandra Whitland donated to in 2024. So the last election cycle. Gee, I wonder if that acting chief judge feels any differently about all of this than the judge that just ruled on it. It is literally impossible for anyone who dissents from Democrats to get a fair shake in this state. And in case you haven't noticed and been keeping track, for anyone who, like, I don't know, voted for $30 car tabs, if there is an initiative of the people that Democrats do not like, it never survives. It won't survive because Democrats own everything. They own the House, they own the Senate, they own the governor's office, they own the attorney general's office, they own the courts from the top to the bottom. They own everything. So if they don't want an initiative of the people to survive, they will find a way to kill it. It might not be at the ballot box. If they can't kill it there, they'll kill it in the courts. And if an initiative does become law, what do they do then? Well, then they just come back to Olympia the next legislative session and they completely upend it. So everything else they tried failed. Oh, we got this initiative. So let's just change the law and upend the initiative, which is what they're doing again today with the Parental Rights Initiative that was just signed into law via voter initiative to the legislature last year, very strategically because they didn't think they could defeat it on the ballot, So they passed it into law and said, oh yeah, we support parental rights. And then they're coming back 8-9 months later and completely unraveling it because they say it was a bad initiative to begin with, even though they passed it into law. So today, as they continue to work to unravel the parental rights initiative, so let's keep in track here. So the natural gas initiative that more Washington voters wanted that did not want, they're defeating that in the courts. They have it all set up to their success. And now the parental rights initiative, which was wildly popular, they're using the legislative branch to try to defeat it. So Senate Bill 5181, which is the Senate version of that bill, has a hearing today. It had kind of sat idle, hadn't been given a hearing in the House Education Committee. We thought maybe it'll die there and they're going to go with the House version of the bill. No, they're going to keep pushing both of them forward and see which one gets across the finish line first. So Senate Bill 5181, upending the Parental Bill of Rights, has a hearing at 1:30 today in the House Education Committee. And who's the prime sponsor of that bill? Well, it's Senator Jamie Peterson, the highest ranking Democrat in the state Senate, who, of course, as a reminder, said this.
Kids over 13 have the complete right to make their own decisions about their mental health care. Parents don't have a right to have notice. They don't have a right to have consent about that. Young women have, if they're old enough to get pregnant, they're old enough to make their own decisions about what happens with their bodies, okay? And parents do not have the right to change that or make a different decision or be notified in advance.
Yeah, that's the kind of person who is dictating every single thing that happens in Washington State, even if it's passed via initiative of the people. He believes he knows best. His fellow Democrats know best. They know what's best for you. So they're going to come back and they're going to upend it. What you want, be damned. So it's like, whether it's natural gas, parental rights, voters, and I blame the voters. I say this and I'm like, these politicians are bad, bad people. I genuinely at this point believe they're bad people. And then they turn around and say Republicans are the threat to democracy. Well, they upend an initiative passed by voters just a couple months ago and then seek to erase an initiative signed into law 8 months ago. Yeah, but Republicans are the ones who are a threat to democracy. Got it. So they're doing all that, right? They don't care what people think. I mean, the initiative process at this point has almost been rendered useless because they're going to find a way to overturn things if they really, really don't like it or more so, it's their puppet masters. So in this case, the Washington Education Association, it doesn't like the Parental Rights Initiative, and the Washington Education Association funds all of their campaigns. So, oh my gosh, we've got to upend this because the WEA doesn't like it. And then they got all their climate buddies who are making millions and millions of dollars off of this climate grift, and they don't want that money to go away. And so they're like, well, you got to find a way, even though voters passed it, you got to find a way to take natural gas away from people. So then we can invest in all these companies that are going to make billions of dollars off the electrification of homes. So it's all really rooted in money. But going back to, I blame voters. Voters gave Democrats a majority in the House. Voters gave Democrats a majority in the Senate. Voters have given Democrats the governor's office for 40 years straight, despite accelerating failure on all fronts, nothing to show for it. The state worse off than it's ever been. And when they give a governor of the same party, when they send him back 12 years in a row, 3 terms in a row, then he gets to pack the courts with judges of his choosing. Elections have consequences. So as mad as I want to be at the corrupt politicians and the corrupt media for not pointing this stuff out along the way and holding the party in power accountable, really at the end of the day, it boils down to more voters want what they're selling than don't, I guess. So what do I say about it? Just continue to try to wake people up to how corrupt they are. And again, they don't believe that voters know what's best. They don't. Absolutely not. They don't believe that you know what's best when it comes to parenting your kids and what's happening with your child's education. They don't believe you know what's best when it comes to how you heat your home. They really don't believe you know what's best on anything. But when we look at one of the only surviving initiatives from last year, because the political winds shifted so much on this issue that Democrats felt like they shouldn't touch it, right? It was all a political calculation. And that was the initiative that restored reasonable police pursuits. So that gets passed into law via the legislature, I-2113, spring of last year. And let me show you why voters, evidence that voters know what they're doing. That voters know what's best for them and what's best for the state when it comes to these initiatives. The Puget Sound Auto Theft Task Force just released its newest numbers comparing 2024 to 2025 when it comes to motor vehicle thefts. They say that the trend is amazing. Huge downward trend. But right now, the number of vehicles stolen so far in 2025 is the lowest number they have seen in 15 years. Gee, I wonder why. Could that be the initiative that restored the ability of police to pursue stolen vehicles on our roadways? Could it be that criminals no longer know that they can just drive off and there's no consequences, like we were saying for years and years and years? So comparing the numbers in King County, this time last year, there were more than 1,000 stolen vehicles by February of 2025. Now that's down to 669. In Pierce County, there were more than 400. That's down to 190, so the comparison year over year. In February year to date, statewide, there were more than 4,000 stolen vehicles by this time in 2024. And now there are 3,346, which is still a lot, by the way, but that's a hell of a big difference from last year. They've been able, via this task force, to recover 48 vehicles, $1.2 million in total value, make 4 arrests, and charge 11 people. So, turns out that initiative was a pretty damn good idea. I just wish, though, that the same voters who supported initiatives like that would turn around and stop supporting the politicians who oppose common sense policies like that. There's something just really messed up here. It's like, the voters who are actually engaged, and I think this is maybe a better way to explain it. The voters who are actually engaged, who know what's going on, who are familiar with the issues, those are the voters making the best decisions. So those are the people who are involved in something like an initiative process, right? They care so much, they're willing to go out there, sign things, collect signatures, get stuff done, change policy. So when I say I blame the voters for making bad decisions, I blame the passive voters. I blame the vote blue no matter who voters. I blame the voters who look at their ballot and they just circle in the things for D. D, 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 because orange man bad or whatever it is. That's how you get an insane far left majority in Olympia, a governor who has decades of failure under his belt, and hypocrisy. That's how you get judges who are bought and paid for. And then that's how you also get initiatives that can be successful, like the initiative to restore reasonable police pursuits. Because it's the voters who vote blue no matter who, party line voters who are destroying the state and handing Democrats way too much power. And then you've got a smaller segment of the voters who are very involved, and they are the voters who will vote for a Democrat here, a Republican here, who are familiar with the issues, who might support, you know, some kind of criminal justice reform, but know that, hey, not letting police pursue stolen vehicles is a really bad idea. They are the voters who have an ounce of independent thought. And if we can just get more of the electorate to start thinking critically and independently about what's going on, we can wake them up, I think. But until then, if we continue to hand the same party all this power in Olympia, we're going to continue to have them so emboldened that they're eroding parental rights, so emboldened that they're perfectly fine upending the will of voters and forcing you to come out of pocket tens of thousands of dollars when it comes to natural gas in your home. It's all just insane. And look, I don't even, as successful as this police pursuit initiative has been over the course of a year in lowering the number of stolen vehicles, I wouldn't put it past the Democrats in Olympia to try to change it. Like, you know, there'll be one instance maybe of a police officer who hits a vehicle during a police pursuit and someone dies. And then they'll come back in Olympia and then they'll go back to the way the law was. They'll be like, you know, maybe we shouldn't let them pursue criminals anymore. So I don't put that past them. The bottom line is we have to have some semblance of balance in Olympia, or they're going to continue to be emboldened by their majorities to undermine the will of voters and to attack our democracy. It's just absolutely insane. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, massive property tax increases are being floated by Democrats in Olympia to try to deal with the budget crisis that they created. First, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital can put your retirement portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency. Wouldn't that be nice? I mean, your retirement is one of the biggest things that you're ever going to plan for in your life. So making sure that you get a second opinion is absolutely critical, just like you would for a major health decision or diagnosis. You'd get a second opinion, right? And so why not do that with your retirement portfolio? If you don't know, if you are, obviously all of us are saving for our retirement, can you tell me, can you detail what your risk management strategy is for your retirement? If you don't know that, if they haven't told you that, what their strategy is for properly mitigating risk, you definitely need a second opinion. So let Woolworth Capital show you a full reveal of how they're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion on your portfolio's efficiency. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, so the tax package just released by Senate Democrats is worse than we could have even imagined. Instead of taking one iota of responsibility for the misspending of your money, they want to reach back into your pockets, tax you out of your home and probably out of the state, because they don't know what it means to budget. Let's discuss it in our segment, Unbelievable. This is nuts. This is just nuts. So this is the kind of thing where I mean that I think we can capture those passive voters. If you can make sure that your friends and family who aren't as in tune with what's going on as you might be, if you can make sure that they're aware of the facts of this proposal, I think that's how you can snap them out of being a passive voter and starting to vote really based on independent thought. So as you know, the state's facing, depending on whose number you believe, roughly a $14 billion budget deficit. So this is the comparison I gave on social media. Let's say that you live like paycheck to paycheck, and you decide you're going to take the money that you need to pay your mortgage, and you're going to take your family on a vacation to Disneyland. And then you get back and you realize, well, I don't have money to pay the mortgage this month because I just blew it all on a vacation to Disneyland that I couldn't afford. Would it be fair to force your neighbors to pay your mortgage for you that month? Do you think that would be fair? Is that the way any of us think when it comes to our family's budget? That's just, oh, Sally doesn't have money for the mortgage, so we all have to split the cost in our neighborhood of covering Sally's mortgage because she decided to spend it on a nice vacation for her family. Of course not. That's stupid. Nobody would be okay with that. But we're okay with the government doing it. We're okay with the government doing it because that's exactly what they're doing with this tax package. Instead of saying we spent too much money, despite ample warnings every year for at least the past 5 years, we continued to increase our spending. And our spending outpaced how much money was coming in. So instead of saying, well, gee, we better cut our spending, we better balance our budget, they're doing the exact opposite. They want to keep spending even more. And then they just want to reach into all of your pockets and take more money to compensate for their shitty financial decisions. So we had said one of the taxes that they were pondering was to increase the property tax levy lid. So voters in this state, like 20 years ago, said that if your county wants to increase your property taxes by more than 1%, they have to go to the people for a vote. So that's what you said. It's like, if we're going to increase our property taxes, you can do it up to 1% at a time without going to people for a vote. But any more than that, you need to ask us if it's okay. They did that via voter initiative. This is going to tie back into our lead story of the day. So now you have counties saying, well, that's just not enough. We want to be able to increase property taxes at a more rapid rate without going to vote those pesky voters for their approval, because people tend to not like property taxes. It's like weird. We have this far, far left pro-tax majority in Olympia, but voters don't like taxes. They don't like income taxes. They don't like property taxes. So what we thought Democrats were contemplating was to raise the property tax levy lid from 1% to 3%, okay? And that's still a big jump. So that was the thought, and that was still bad. Like, oh my gosh, they're going to jump 1% to 3%. Now King County, anytime it has an opportunity, it's going to raise property taxes by 3%. Doesn't even have to ask people. If that were the proposal, it would still be bad. But the proposal Senate Democrats just came out with is way, way worse than that. So they just dropped a massive tax proposal package. There's a few things in here, but let me focus in on the property tax thing. This is how the Washington State Standard describes it. So it would allow an increase in annual property tax growth from the current 1% cap to the combined rate of population growth plus inflation, which would generate an estimated $779 million over 4 years. So essentially, there would be no cap to how much they could increase your property taxes every year without a vote of the people, as long as it's the combined rate of population growth plus inflation. So this is insane to me. And we'll get back to the rest of these proposals in a second. But basically, if you have a year where inflation's really high or the population growth is up, you could be looking at like a 9% increase to your property taxes without them even having to ask you. Without them even having to ask you. This will put people out of their homes. This will be the largest property tax increase statewide we've ever seen. This will force people who had made it work to retire here, who might have lived in their home for 30, 40 years, out of their home to retire somewhere else. This will force working class people out of their homes. I mean, property taxes are already insane. So imagine if instead of 1% a year without a vote, they can go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9% a year. How is anyone going to be able to afford that? And they say they're the party of the working people and that our tax system is regressive. This is going to absolutely devastate the plans of so many families to raise their kids here and to retire here. They will not be able to afford it. At the same time that Democrats are talking about and complaining about the lack of affordability and the increased cost of housing. Oh, housing is so expensive. We have to institute rent control. But at the same time, we want to dramatically increase your property taxes. Well, gee, what do you think dramatic increases in the property tax is going to lead to? Well, it's going to lead to landlords having to increase rent. And then you're going to cap the amount of rent where they can increase. So what, they're going to lose money and just keep their properties and not take them out of the rental market? Have you lost your minds? None of that makes a bit of sense. But of course, they're going to focus less on, I mean, this is insane. You need to tell your friends and family who are passive voters or vote blue, no matter who voters, how bad this property tax proposal is and how much they could see their property taxes increase. Because I know you'll all have family members who will not be able to afford it and will have to sell their homes and move out of state. Wild. It's wild. Even worse than we thought. So that's just one of the tax proposals that they're putting forth to balance the budget. And by balance the budget, just be able to keep spending money outrageously without any sort of accountability. So they're also proposing, as we anticipated, the business tax, which would expand Seattle's failed payroll tax across the entire state. So that's the tax that puts a premium on high-paying jobs. Because again, Democrats go out there protesting, pay a living wage. Everyone should deserves a living wage, and saying that businesses aren't paying employees too much. And now they want to also punish businesses who pay employees too much. Wrap your mind around that one. That's what the payroll tax did in Seattle. It was essentially targeted at Amazon. And it said, if you pay your employees over this threshold, so like if you pay your employees too well, we're going to put a tax on that. And so what did Amazon do? Well, it picked up 10,000 jobs. It moved them to Bellevue. But now even Bellevue wouldn't be out of reach because this proposal would expand Seattle's jumpstart payroll tax statewide. So what do you think Bellevue, or what do you think Amazon's going to do then if they can't escape the crazy policies of Seattle? That they move jobs to Bellevue for that reason? Well, they'll probably just move them out of state. There are plenty of states Amazon already has a footprint in that I already know Amazon would be more than happy and has the means to pick up and leave. And you think that will be good for our economy? You think that won't put us in a budget crisis if Amazon picks up and leaves? So that's another one of the proposals. Insane stuff. And then the wealth tax. And actually a lower threshold of wealth than we even anticipated. I think it was worldwide wealth of $100 million. They've dropped that to $50 million. So they want to tax anyone who has wealth above $50 million, $10 on every $1,000 of assessed value of certain financial assets. So unrealized gains. They want to tax you for the privilege of holding wealth, where you haven't even realized the gains on it yet. What do you think is going to happen? I've already heard from rich people. They're not going to pay that tax. They are not going to pay that tax. What did Jeff Bezos do when the capital gains tax was passed? Which they passed really as like a Jeff Bezos tax. He just moved to Miami. It's very easy for them. They have lots of money. They have lots of good attorneys who can figure out all the law. They're just going to live somewhere else on paper because they got houses all over the place. So they're just going to live somewhere else on paper. They're never going to pay that. And they might even just live somewhere else in real life. And they'll pick up all the economic activity that having someone worth $50 million or more brings to our state. The donations they make to nonprofits. If you're a business owner, the people who you hire, the people who you employ, and then how all of that trickles down. So you've got a company like Amazon, because of these asinine policies, they decide we're just going to pick up and leave. Not only are you talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs, you're talking about all of the economic activity that supports that workforce. So if you look at South Lake Union in Seattle, all the restaurants, all the daycares, all the laundromats, every business that exists in that area to support Amazon's workforce goes under. All because Democrats can't budget. And they want to continue to spend tens of millions of dollars to their cronies and their allies who donate to their political campaigns. They got to keep the money going in the climate grift. They got to keep the money going to the Washington Education Association. They got to keep the money going into all these homelessness nonprofits that don't fix homelessness. And it is going to devastate our economy if either of those proposals are passed. It's so crazy to me they don't say that. And then they throw this in. This is hilarious. Again, please note this for your friends or family who are passive voters, because they will see a headline about this and they'll celebrate it like, oh my gosh, Democrats are cutting the sales tax. How great is that? So Democrats threw this in. Starting January 1st, 2027, in their tax package, they would reduce the state sales tax from 6.5% to 6%. So virtually nothing, especially when you compare it to the amount of money you'll lose. You'll be out when they increase your property taxes at astronomical rates. But you know why they did this, right? You know why they put this in, right? Because they know that people are passive news consumers and they're going to use it and they're going to push out headlines and have their buddies in the media push out headlines. Democrats propose cutting the sales tax. And people won't read further than that. They're like, wow, Democrats want to, they're not taxing everybody left and right. Like Brandi Crews says, they're cutting the sales tax. And they're not going to read any further than the headlines that Democrats and the Democrat-controlled media puts out. And then you'll have people who continue their vote blue no matter who, because yay, Democrats are cutting the sales tax by 0.5%. While they're simultaneously looking to massively jack up your property taxes. Again, it's all in how this information reaches voters. And as much as I love our audience, we don't reach every voter in the state. I wish we did. We don't reach every voter in the state. So now we're relying on legacy media, which is owned by the Democratic Party, to cover this issue. And you already know how. And then you have the liars in the Democratic Party, like Senator Marco Elias, who during this Climate Commitment Act debate, he was spreading all sorts of half-truths and lies on his social media. And that's what they'll do with this. I already see the graphics that they'll create now. Democrats are trying to put more money in your pocket by cutting the sales tax, period. You already see it. I guarantee they're already out. If you see one, send it to me. Because they know that low-information voters are the voters who keep them in office. It's nuts. Meanwhile, Republicans just saying what is true. Senator Chris Gildon on the Republican side saying this is a new kind of March Madness. especially the new attempt to do away with the 1% cap voters had put on property tax growth. We keep hearing from Senate Dems that they want to make the wealthiest Washingtonians pay more, but the property tax increase they want is regressive. It would fall directly on the backs of families who are far from wealthy and also become a pass-through cost to renters across our state. He went on to say, to me, that's talking out of both sides of your mouth. Everyone knows what the Climate Commitment Act has done to their cost of living, yet it's a lot smaller than any of the taxes the Democrats propose today. 100%. So you already got the CCA, which voters didn't repeal. Voters had a chance to repeal it. Voters should have known, if they were informed voters, that this is going to and has increased up to 50% per gallon that they pay at the pump. And there were so many lies and half-truths pushed by Democrats that voters kept it. But the impact of that on your budget, as Senator Gildon points out, is minuscule to what the impact will be on your family's budget if this property tax goes through. My throat's dry from yelling. Sorry, hold on. I've got to lube my vocal cords so I can continue to yell. Give me a second. Minuscule compared to what will happen if the property tax increase goes through. And then the economic devastation, if we pass a wealth tax and or push Seattle's failed payroll tax statewide. Not to mention, if you're renting and you're mad about the cost of rent, the property tax thing is kind of going to make that worse, right? It's just all absolutely, absolutely asinine. All right, I'm going to move on. So just a really tough episode of Sundays with Subscribers yesterday. We've been talking about Governor Jay Inslee's decision to release mass murderer Timothy Pawley and to do it in his final hours as governor so he didn't have to take accountability for his decision. Well, we have some new exclusive reporting on this today. This story is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So by now, you're probably familiar because we've discussed it in recent days on the show so much. Governor Jay Inslee decided, final hours as governor, quietly without any fanfare, to sign an order of release for Timothy Pawley. Timothy Pawley a robbery that went exactly how he and his buddy intended it to go. 1980, SeaTac, Barn Door Tavern. They tried to kill 5 people. Successfully killed 3. 2 survived. So Timothy Pawley is a mass murderer. He's one of the worst mass murderers in our state's history. And Jay Inslee decided one of the last things that he was going to do as governor is grant Timothy Pawley's release. And it had been kind of an interesting, very interesting series of events with Timothy Pawley, because we have something in the state called the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board. So prisoners have a right to petition for release and have the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board review, you know, what they've done behind prison, their new remarks, anything like that, and decide should they be released early. Well, Timothy Pawley had gone to that board in 2016. And in 2016, not only did the board deny his early release, they actually added time onto his sentence because they said it was way too light for the atrocities that he committed. When they committed this robbery, they executed 2 people execution style in the freezer and then tried to hang 3 others to death. It was atrocious. So this board in 2016 wasn't full of ideologues at the time. And they said, not only are we not letting you out, we're going to give you more time. So then, of course, after 2016, our state went off on this insane trajectory of criminal justice reform. Everyone deserves a second chance. So in 2022, Timothy Pawley's case went back before the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board, and they decided to grant him early release. Well, there was so much, like the families of his victims raised holy hell, met with Governor Inslee. Governor Inslee, just in 2022, denied it, said, I don't agree with the board. Timothy Pawley has not come to terms with the gravity of his actions. And so he denied less than three years ago. Timothy Pawley's early release. And then you fast forward, again, less than 3 years. And one of Inslee's final acts on his way out of office is to say, never mind, I'm going to let the mass murderer out of prison. And not only am I going to do that, I am not even going to pick up the phone and call his surviving victims or the family members of his victims. I'm not even going to give them any say in it. I'm not going to hear their arguments this time around. I'm just going to do it. So on Sunday's show, we had Angie and Kelly in. So they are the daughters of two of Polly's victims. Polly succeeded in killing their father and almost succeeded that night in killing their mother. And they reacted to Governor Inslee's decision.
What would your message be to Governor Inslee if he sees this?
I would tell him that he's a coward. And the fact that he didn't have the common decency or courtesy to let us know that this has come across my desk. I am contemplating this. Is there anything that you want to contribute, to submit? And the fact that he did not give us that common decency or that just courtesy, it was cowardice, especially being done on his last day of office.
Anything that you would like to add to our former governor if he sees this?
Yeah, basically everything that Angie said. And I would go even a step further. It's inhumane in terms of the way that we've been treated. It's beyond a cowardly act on his part. He has all of our contacts. And the fact that he did this, it feels we're people and we're survivors and victims of everything. He didn't know our mom had passed. This is not political. This has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with right and wrong and justice. I don't know what was in his mind to make that decision before he left, but the fact that he did it on his last day before he left feels like it was political. I hope that it wasn't, but our family deserves justice. We deserve peace. So does the Oy family. Polly deserves to spend the rest of his life behind bars. And the fact that he overturned that decision just adds more salt to the wound.
Yeah, and I know why Jay Inslee did it as he left office, because he is a coward. I agree 100% with Angie. He's an absolute coward, and he didn't want to be around to be convinced not to do it again, like the pressure, the public pressure campaign he faced in 2022, which is the only reason he went against the board at the time. He's like, well, if I just do it quietly in my final hours in office, there won't be a public pressure campaign. And then I can ride off into the sunset to Idaho or wherever I'm retiring to get away from the hellhole I created. And I won't have to be accountable for it. That's why he did it in his final hours in office. Without as so much of a phone call. Can you imagine? Can you even put yourself in that mindset? Deciding you're going to release someone who killed three people, tried to kill two others, but by the grace of God, they didn't die. One of them being their mom. And not even picking up. Can you even imagine having that cold of a heart? Being that bad of a person? Even if you'd already made up your mind to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it. Here's why. Is there anything you want to say to me? Can I answer any questions? Didn't even do it. Now, here is the new exclusive reporting that we have on this today. So as we learned on Sundays with Subscribers when Angie Dowell and Kelly Tarp came on the show, they did get a call from Bob Ferguson last week from his office, which I am very happy about. So our understanding is that they are maybe meeting with him today. So Bob Ferguson, the new governor, I give him credit for this. He called them when Jay Inslee would not. Wasn't his mess to clean up, but he was willing to make that difficult call anyway, his office was, and to say, you know, Bob Ferguson would like to meet with you. So we think that that meeting might be happening today. We're checking in with him to make sure. And that leads me to believe that he has the power to stop Jay Inslee's decision, to reverse it. If he doesn't have that power, it would be really weird for him to get their hopes up. So I'm guessing he believes that he can stop this from happening. And I hope that he does that. But at the very least, I applaud him for doing something that Jay Inslee didn't have the heart to do in at least talking to the families, right? So I give him that credit. Here's something. So we've been in close touch with the families, with Angie and Kelly. They've requested all these documents from the Department of Corrections about this decision, trying to figure out why were we cut out of this? How did this happen without us knowing about it? And they found this email that disgusting is a good word, I guess. But it shows you, and I think it encapsulates how criminals, no matter how bad, even if you're a mass murderer, they are put on a pedestal above victims and above survivors. That the needs and the wants and the desires and the feelings of criminals, even a mass murderer, come before the law abiding. So you all know by now Representative Tara Simmons. So she was a prisoner herself. She's a felon. She is formerly incarcerated, which I've given her credit for in the past. She turned her life around. She's a state lawmaker. Good for her. But then she's used this newfound power to singularly focus on making life easier for criminals. She's pushed some of the craziest bills that you've heard on the public safety front. Reducing punishments for drive-by shooters who kill people, reducing sentencing enhancements, trying to get people out of prison early. All of that is Tara Simmons. So she's like, gets out of prison, gets elected to the state house, and now she wants to help other prisoners get out of prison too. So buried in hundreds of emails about Timothy Pawley's release is an email, an internal email in the Department of Corrections. Here's what it tells us. Tara Simmons wanted to be the one to personally inform mass murderer Timothy Pawley that he was getting out. She wanted to be the one to do that. So she gets in touch with the deputy secretary of DOC, Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy gets in touch with DOC staff at the prison where Timothy Pawley is being housed. Sean Murphy, again, the number two in charge at DOC, directs the staff to get Representative Tara Simmons on the phone, to put her on speakerphone, and to walk that cell phone over to Timothy Pawley so she could have the privilege of informing mass murderer Timothy Pawley that he was getting out of prison. From this Sergeant Jessica Moore, she's in this email detailing what happened. I asked Sergeant Wirth to walk with me out to the complex and assist in making the notification to Pawley. State Representative Tara Simmons was placed on speakerphone while Sergeant Wirtz and I stood outside the trailer entrance. She shared the news with Pawley and his family member. They were overjoyed at the news. So think of how that played out. Number two at the Department of Corrections, having a conversation with Tara Simmons. We don't know who contacted who first, but Tara Simmons wants to be the one to tell Timothy Pawley he's getting out of prison. So the number two at the Department of Corrections tells prison staff, you take a cell phone, Tara Simmons will be on the other line. You bring that cell phone personally over to mass murderer Timothy Pawley, and you let Representative Tara Simmons, the queen of soft on crime, inform a gleeful Timothy Pawley and his family member that he'll be getting out of prison courtesy of Jay Inslee. And now compare that to the experience of Pawley's victims' families who weren't told anything. No politician felt the need to personally inform Angie and Kelly that the guy who killed their father and tried to kill their mother would be getting out of prison. Jay Inslee didn't feel the need. Tara Simmons certainly didn't feel the need. She was so excited. I've got to be the one to tell mass murderer Timothy Pawley he's getting out of prison. Meanwhile, the families of the victims were left in the dark. And you tell me that Democrats haven't chosen a side, that they haven't chosen the side of criminals over victims and survivors and the law abiding. And the second in charge at DOC never struck anyone. The DOC, the prison, hey, have the families been notified? It was all about letting Timothy Pawley know. And he was, in the words of this sergeant with DOC, overjoyed. I'm sure he was. Because he got to kill three people, try to kill two others, and he's going to see the light of day. I can believe that. But the callousness. Let's personally have a state lawmaker deliver that message to Timothy Pawley, and let's keep the family in the dark. It is heartbreaking. It is infuriating. I want to play one more clip from this interview we did with Angie and Kelly, who I also want to note, they buried their mom, Margaret. the day before they found out Polly was getting released, Margaret survived an ordeal that is so horrific and graphic that night in 1980 that it's too graphic to talk about even on this show. And her daughter said that it haunted her the rest of her life until the day she died. She was never the same again. They buried their mom the day before they found out. Can you imagine what this has been like for them? For those of us who care to imagine what it's like for victims and survivors, what the state is putting them through? Can you imagine what this is like for them? Their mom lives her whole life after this in a state of trauma. And she did. She was never the same again. They lived their whole lives without their father. He died when they were 9 and 13 years old. They think that this is behind them. Jay Inslee has denied the release of one of their killers. Then their mom dies. They bury her and say goodbye to her and find out the next day that the guy who tried to kill her and kill their dad is getting out of prison. And Jay Inslee didn't even have the decency to tell them or to give them a say or to hear their side. Disgusting. These people are disgusting. So Angie and Kelly, it was a really emotional interview. I asked them about this concept. So one of the things that Tara Simmons believes and these other soft on crime lawmakers in Olympia believe is if you say you'll never get out, there's no chance. They say, well, that doesn't give the inmates anything to work toward. It doesn't give them any reason to participate in programs and become better people and rehabilitate themselves if they have no hope ever of release. So that's the idea of giving even somebody like Timothy Pauly hope that he'll be released someday. So I asked the girls about that.
They say that if you don't give them hope that they could get out at some point, that there is no incentive for them to become a better person behind bars. What do you say to that assertion from Democrats? That we have to give them hope that they could get out someday.
What about the hope for our peace and our kind of sense of closure and sense of security and sense of being able to move on with our lives? We've often said that there's no truth in sentencing anymore. That, again, an offender, incarcerated individual, whatever we're going to call them, has more rights, and being able to petition for early release at any time, it is a slap in the face to the victims, the survivors, the individuals that actually have to pick up the pieces after what they have done and move on with their lives and be law-abiding citizens, paying taxes, being a good person, doing all these things and going about our lives and being successful, knowing that, oh, in 10 years, 15 years, this person that should be serving a life sentence, which is about 20, we're going to say 20 years, possibly, could be released, if not sooner. And that my dad, Robert, Linda, my mom, their lives didn't matter. You're not equating what their lives mattered. You're equating what this individual's life matters.
You're putting more merit on that murderer, that rapist, whatever it is that person did, mm-hmm. they get more merit than mm-hmm. the person who was victimized or mm-hmm. ended up losing their lives or barely survived or was humiliated and put through hell by being forced to strip and crawl on their hands and knees and be tied together and left for dead. Again, whose lives should have more weight and merit? Again, the other thing I go back to is, what were they charged with? What was the original charge? What was the original sentence? What did they plea down to? Right there, they've already been given a second chance.
Yeah.
They already got their opportunity. Mm-hmm. We don't get a second chance. I don't get a second opportunity to say, oh, guess what? No. I can go see my dad. He's going to come back and see us. Robert doesn't get to relive his life at the age of, what, 22?
22.
Linda doesn't get to finish her life. My mom doesn't get to have a redo. In terms of our family doesn't get to be put back together. We're not a puzzle piece. Mm-hmm.
There are certain crimes and there are certain things that happen that you can't put everything under the same umbrella. Yeah. There are certain crimes, there are certain things that happen that, and I think both Smith and Polly fall under that capsule, along with Gary Ridgway, that these individuals, there is something broken inside them that they should never be. They're never going to be rehabilitated. They're never going to be able to be released and be functional.
Yeah. So we actually just got some breaking news on this. Angie and Kelly just got in touch with us. Nicole had been trying to reach them earlier and they weren't responding. And she thought, well, maybe they're meeting with Bob Ferguson right now. And they were. They told us they had a meeting with Governor Ferguson today at 10:30. They just got out of that meeting. So it lasted quite a while, it sounds like. They said, now we wait for him to review the file. He told us that they were reviewing it over the weekend. I think this is like, I'm not even like sad. I'm actually very happy that he took the time to talk to them today. And I've been very hard on Bob. And he told us they were reviewing it over the weekend and hope to have a decision the next day or two at the latest. I think why that strikes me so much is Nicole and I, you know, Nicole has been known that family for much longer than I have. And, was there when they were going through all this in 2022 and had covered it quite a bit. And, you know, when you sit down with people like that, and it was a very emotional day when they were in here taping with us for Sunday show. And you know, we got news of this Tara Simmons thing over the weekend, and you realize like just how it's hard when you have never gone through something like that, I guess, to understand the emotions that a family goes through. But when, like everything I just detailed, when you realize that politicians in this state thought enough of Timothy Pawley's feelings to want to deliver that information to him personally. And then this family that has lost everything, like lost their father, robbed of all those years with their dad. Mom was never the same. They just laid their mom to rest. And then they're hit with this. And you realize like the amount of emotional energy that they've had to put into this situation over the years when they should have just had whatever peace they could have. Like they have to continually have had to go through this since 2016 with this fear that this guy who did this horrible thing would get released. And then just a slap in the face, salt in the wound to have Governor Inslee think so little of their feelings that he would do this on his way out of office. And I think that, I think they really believe that it was a done deal. And maybe it is. I don't know what Bob Ferguson and his team are thinking, but I've been very, very hard on Governor Ferguson. And I think that for him to be the one to call them, to take the time, a lot of time today to meet with them and to at least say that he's giving this case the review that it needs with the family's feelings in mind, like Governor Inslee should have done. So again, I think that's just like a little bit of gratitude for Governor Ferguson for taking the time to talk to them today, even if the decision isn't different from what Inslee came to. I think that's all they wanted, right? They wanted the same input that Timothy Pawley and his advocates like Tara Simmons got. And that's a no-brainer. That's not something that they should have to beg for. Just to have the same amount of input and to have all the evidence weighed the same in deciding whether to release a guy who killed three people and tried to kill two others. And for Governor Ferguson, I guess, to at least give them the time of day and to say that, hey, you know, I want to hear from you. That's the right thing to do. I give him a lot of credit for that. So I guess we'll wait and we'll hear from them. Nicole, anything to add?
No, I think that's it. I just think it's so unfair that they've had to not only go through this and you know, their mom having to her life change, but now these girls have had to make it their mission. I mean, this has altered their lives in so many ways. And it's just so sad to me that this continually has to be a fight.
Yeah.
For justice. It's unbelievable.
And even if Bob Ferguson doesn't, you know, change the release, they're going to have to fight this fight till he dies. And then till his co-defendant dies. Mm-hmm. Until both of them are dead, our system puts them through this hell until the people who did it are dead. Is that right? Shouldn't we have some finality for victims when someone goes to prison that does something like that? that you know they're never going to see the light of day again, so you can try to put your life back together. But our system and the Democrats in this state so prioritize criminals that you're willing to put this family through hell over and over and over and over again. It's just nuts. You can watch that full interview with Angie and Kelly. It aired yesterday on Sundays with subscribers. Just go to undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And I think that's one of the easy ways to get involved. Future 42 is always sending out these notifications for you to testify on behalf of bills or against bills, or to register your opinion on them, things like this. So it does make a difference. Anyway, sorry about that. I know I had some Kleenexes around here. That's what I was off looking for. But I'm glad that Bob Ferguson met with him. That was the right thing to do. Okay, I've told you guys about the First Mark Challenge. We'll do a fun story next. How does that sound? We'll do a fun story next. Okay, great. Nobody wants to see Brandy cry. I know you guys don't come on the show to see me cry. The thing is, I have so much makeup on that it hits my face and it immediately dries because it just absorbs into my 10 pounds of powder. I told you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. And that's because it can save you money. And now with Democrats trying to increase your property taxes, we can all use all the possible savings that we can get. We hear so many great stories from Undivided viewers and listeners who took the First Mark Challenge and they were able to save money. Chad says that he went to First Mark for his car, house, and pet insurance. They weren't able to help him save money with his car or house insurance, but they did get him insurance to cover his service dog Sergeant, and it saved him over $100 a month. And Sergeant's adorable. He sent us a picture of him and Sergeant, so I understand why you got to get that service dog insured. And they saved him over $100 a month over the insurance he had before. That's $1,200 a year, people. So he said, Levi at First Mark told him it was the first pet insurance policy he ever did. I truly love the customer service Levi gave him. And we hear stories of Eric says they saved him 30% on his auto policy, 70% on his homeowner's policy. So thousands of dollars a year. So it's definitely worth a call to First Mark just to see. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, as you guys know, I'm a recovering TDSer. And this is a great example of how of my recovery and how it's going. Because previously, like a couple years ago, if I'd seen this story, I would have been like, oh my God, Donald Trump is so self-centered. He's so annoying. He cares about dumb stuff. And I would have ranted and railed about it. Now I see this and I'm like, Donald Trump is one of us. Like, Donald, he's so funny. Isn't it weird how my mind has just totally shifted in the way that I look at this guy? It's just wild.
I'm just so grateful.
I know. It doesn't mean I love everything he does. I've talked about some things I don't.
That's the thing, but is you don't have to love everything. You don't have to hate everything. You can look at everything as one thing.
Right. Just individually, like case by case basis. But this just cracks me up. And it would have made me so mad before. So apparently there is a painting of President Donald Trump in the state capitol in Colorado. And it's terrible.
He looks like a teenager that's like trying to look like a man. I don't know.
And his cheeks are so like fat and saggy in it. And, you know, he's lost a lot of weight recently. And so he wasn't always the fittest guy. But this isn't even about it making him look pudgy. You're right. It makes him look like a little boy in a man suit. Mm-hmm. It's so bad. So Donald hates it. President Trump hates it, and he wants everyone to know.
I don't blame him.
He says nobody likes a bad picture or painting of themselves. But the one in Colorado in the state capitol put up by the governor along with all other presidents was purposefully distorted to a level that even I perhaps have never seen before. The artist also did President Obama, and he looks wonderful, but the one of me is truly the worst. She must have lost her talent as she got older. In any event, I would much prefer not having a picture than having this one, but many people from Colorado have called and written to complain. In fact, they are actually angry about it. I'm speaking on their behalf to the radical left Governor Jared Polis, who is extremely weak on crime, in particular, with no respect to Trende Aragua, which practically took over Aurora. Don't worry, we saved it to take it down. Jared should be ashamed of himself over this. It is a bad picture. Nobody likes. Nicole has done this thing occasionally that I don't like, and she's going to deny that she does it.
She has posted
some really bad pictures of me because she looked good in the pictures. Nothing bothers me more. If someone doesn't like a picture of him, you got to take it down.
If somebody says they don't like a picture, I will take it down immediately because I hope for the same respect.
There is nothing worse than like a friend who won't, who, like, they love that picture of them so much that they don't care if you look like a troll in it.
Right.
It will remain up. And God knows there's been, I just relate to him so much. Because that's a terrible picture.
Absolutely. And I would demand it down as well.
Yeah.
I like that he blames it on the artist. Apparently, I did read a little more into this. I think the artist actually died. So this is a new artist. And they petitioned. Oh, okay. I think they were paid like $10,000 for that painting. And it was a whole scandal because they didn't have a painting for a while when they thought they should. They solicited donations. They didn't get any because he was giving their money towards a painting, right? Yeah. And then when they didn't have one, then the Republicans got involved, got the money. But then, they went to an artist that didn't do so well.
Yeah, that is just absolutely hilarious. And then, of course, the headlines are the news headlines about it are just how I would have reacted 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I would have probably written one of these headlines two years ago. Yep. Let's see. Rolling Stone. Trump loses it over distorted portrait of himself. The Guardian. Insecure baby. Trump draws ridicule after throwing fit over Colorado Capitol portrait. New York Magazine. This is a good description of it. Trump demands that Colorado take down his jowly portrait. It is his jowls look all messed up.
Yep.
100%. Trump complains about his distorted portrait in Colorado's Capitol. Yeah. But it's bad. And also, Nicole was on X looking at reactions to this. And a guy named Michael Beklos said that this is not the first time that a president hasn't liked a portrait of themselves and insisted that it not be hung up. It says Theodore Roosevelt sat for this 1903 White House portrait by a Frenchman, Theodore Chartrand, but hated it so much that he had it burned. Family members dissed the image as the mewing cat. He does look very effeminate in this picture.
He called himself a cat as well. He said, I look like a mewing cat, I guess. And that's interesting. Why he said no. He does look a little scowly.
So not only did he have it taken down, he never wanted it to be seen or recreated again. So he had it burned.
So, but it lives on somehow.
That's true. It does live on somehow.
But, just like Trump's. I mean, had he not acknowledged it, it would not have gone nationwide.
Oh, yeah.
But I still think there's always their strategy behind that. So he gets a little sympathy from some, points out the ridiculousness of some Democrats, and it is what it is because it was never going to disappear.
Yeah, it's just wild. It's too funny. It cracks me up. All right, AOC and Bernie Sanders 2028. So this is all over. So AOC and Bernie Sanders are going around the country having these stop the oligarchy rallies. And I'll be honest, they're pretty well attended. They're having some fairly big rallies, but it has led people to believe that maybe they're thinking about teaming up on a presidential ticket in 2028. AOC tweeted out 86,000 people in 3 days at our first stop alone. Half the crowd were brand new people, not previously on any list or contact. Many were first timers. What is happening right now is different. We must use this moment to fight back and defend our democracy, which is interesting because democracy is the reason that Donald Trump is president right now. But I digress. But the way she worded that, what's happening right now is different. She's clearly interested in running for the White House. I think that's very clear. Now, look, would Democrats be so dumb as to run another old, very, very old white man? I don't think so. I mean, the chief issue with Biden was his age. I mean, Bernie Sanders has better mental faculties than Biden did, but we're talking about 4 years down the road. How old is Bernie Sanders right now? He's got to be. Bernie Sanders age. You look up. 83.
83.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that they're going to do that. But that doesn't mean that AOC might not end up on a presidential ticket. And part of me wants to react by saying, and this is our Daily Show poll, which I'll get to in a moment. Part of me says, do it. Like, oh my God, please run Bernie Sanders and AOC for the presidency in 2028. But I've joked about this and saying, you know, the pendulum always swings back and forth, like to the extremes. And if Donald Trump takes things too far, I was like, that's how you're going to get a president AOC in 2028. And even some of the nationwide polls that have been put out recently by Legacy Media that says, who is the leader of the Democratic Party? AOC is winning in those polls. But you know, she may maybe more accurately reflects the party's far left positioning, but far left isn't what's going to win you the presidency. There are still a lot of people across this country who are rational Democrats. So part of me thinks just do it, like 100%, because they will lose in spectacular fashion. But I asked you in our subscriber poll, exclusive to subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, regardless of whether you'd vote for her, okay? Do you believe that AOC would have a chance of winning the presidency in 2028? If, like, just what we know right now to be true. Nicole, regardless of whether you'd vote for her, which I know you wouldn't.
Yeah, no, I don't believe. I don't believe she could win right now.
If the election were held today, I mean, I definitely don't think she would win.
For sure not today, but I think that the blue states are going to show that that's an even worse idea than it was last year.
Well, especially if they don't learn anything, right? But the idea and what the lesson they're not learning is that you went too far with this crazy, you know, gender ideology, you know, the racism that you pushed via, you know,
and they're not reverse racism. They're not acknowledging that it is not what people want. They have doubled down on it.
Yeah. Let's see. On Patreon right now, 10% of people are saying, yes, I think she'd have a chance of winning. Matt says, if the Republicans don't get their act together and come through on the issues, that idiot could be a possibility. And also, not just even get their act together, but again, you just can't take things too far. And with all these things Trump's doing, there's always the danger of that, right? Like the birthright citizenship issue, which is just unconstitutional. He can't, with a stroke of his pen, unravel birthright citizenship. So I just wish he'd leave some of those things off and definitely focus on, like, a lot of the 80-20 issues. There's so many 80-20 issues that Republicans are on the right side of, like banning boys from girls' sports. Go all in on that. Don't turn it into a hateful thing, but go all in on that. Make it all about protecting women, not about attacking trans people, et cetera. So my concern is, you go too far, you really don't have to lose that many Americans. And I think people have to keep that in mind. It's this small little sliver of the electorate that kind of goes back and forth. So it's not like you have to anger a bunch of Americans by going too far. You just have to anger a few. And that's when things go the other way. So that's scary to me. Julie, the people that love Kamala love AOC. They're on the 20 side of the 80-20. Walter harbors, hopefully she will be imprisoned by then. Why is she going to go to prison for? Let me see. Joel, not just no, hell no. Let me see. Bloom Kitty, I wish I could say no, but AOC understands new media. She is good at getting a message out there. And that is true. Even though M. Mays says she's nauseating. I agree with that as well. She also doesn't know the issues. And that was one of the primary problems with Kamala Harris, is you can only fake it for so long. When you're running a presidential campaign, all the speeches you're giving, all the interviews you're giving, the sit-downs and the impromptu interviews, all the interactions you're having with voters in today's media age, every single thing is captured on video. Everything you've said previously is captured on video. And when you don't know what you're talking about, you don't have a firm grasp of the issues, it doesn't take long for that to become obvious. And that was the case with Kamala Harris during her campaign. She couldn't hide it anymore. There was no amount of Fed lines, training, whatever it is, scripted interviews that could hide the fact she did not know what she's talking about. And AOC has had way too many of those moments. So there are some issues that I think she's well versed on, but foreign affairs, I mean, I watched this firing lines thing she did that was on the situation in Gaza. This was a couple years ago now, but it was embarrassing. I mean, she takes such a firm stance on that issue, but then knew nothing about it. It was wild. So Ken, I voted no, but if Trump's economic policy when it comes to tariffs crashes the economy, the AOC wing could have a chance. All right, we'll see. Okay, we'll get to comments in our closing sanity check coming up. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, May is going to be a great month of the year to do it, according to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. And it is a seller's market right now. There is a ton of pent-up demand. So when a home hits the market that's properly prepared for listing and priced correctly, he said those homes are performing so well. I mean, we just had a home in our neighborhood. We're waiting to find out what it went for, but it is above and beyond any sort of price for a home in our neighborhood we've seen. So the market is ready. If there's a good home that pops, the market is absolutely ready to scoop that home up and to give you a good offer for it. So he says that he can do a couple things when you first reach out to him. Give you a free market analysis. You kind of know how well your home is positioned, depending on where it is and how homes in your neighborhood have been doing. And then he can help you decide whether there's anything that really needs to be done to your home to make sure you get the best possible price. And he can use his Listing Boost concierge service, where they come in and handle all of that for you. Take it totally off the plate. You can even pay for it at closing, which is really nice as well. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Reach out to a few real estate agents. I mean, I say that for everything. Get a few opinions, and I think you'll find that Wes and his team have definitely the best services available out there right now in the market. So sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home.
Including happy hours and
oh my gosh, he invited us to a home. I couldn't go on Friday, but he invited us to a
showing.
A showing. Because they were going to be serving up my favorite drink of the moment, espresso martinis, because I'm a basic bee like that. I mean, my favorite drink is a good whiskey ginger ale, but man, they're getting creative with those espresso martinis.
I know.
And so he reached out. I'm like, what kind of showings are you doing with your bar and espresso martinis?
Right?
I was like, see, he's just got it down.
Genius.
I love it. Genius. Okay, let's see. Matthew Adams. Wow, with the super chats today, you guys. Is it because I cried? Listen.
Actually, I think they all came in before that.
Okay. So. wasn't full cry. Let's be clear. I don't cry. I'm strong and brave.
You can cry and be strong, too.
Thanks, Nicole. Matthew Adams, $20 Super Chat. Brandy, please show Jonathan Cho's video from the protest at Rep. Tara Simmons last Saturday and later at her town hall event. I am the guy from the video. I saw that on social media. I'll have to check it out and see if there's an element of it we want to play. I know that people protested her house and she blamed it on MAGA, like basically suggesting there was a threatening MAGA crowd. And I was like, dude, you're an elected leader. You make some really crazy decisions. People are going to protest you. Now, I don't want her to feel unsafe in her home. I don't think that's ever appropriate. There are a million places you can protest a state representative or a politician. Like, I don't like, for instance, cornering people out in public. At the same time, like, with this, you're making decisions that are horrible and could put people's lives at risk without any care or concern. So I definitely don't want people engaging in any threatening behavior against a politician. But I don't think standing peacefully outside their house is threatening behavior. I just don't love it. Baron of Gray Matter, $5 Super Chat. So it's either move and save 30% on your budget and taxes or implement a 2A option and all that comes with it. It has to come to this. So it's either move and save 30% of your budget and taxes or implement 2A option. Not sure what that means. Julie Kennedy Consulting. My neighbor said the initiative stated they could not give incentives to switch to gas and this was not clear to voters. Do you know if this is true? I mean... There were several elements to her ruling, but they could not give incentives to switch to gas. I'm not sure about that. That doesn't stand out to me. Missy, they've been doing this for as long as I can remember. We voted against the Kingdome being imploded for a new stadium, and they still went against the people's vote and built a new stadium anyway. Hello, Watermelon says, oh, hello. I also blame media for not accurately reporting what's going on in Olympia, 100%. More so than the politicians, it's the media and uninformed voters who are just passively gliding through life as if none of this impacts them. I envy them. I do. Jethro, how do we hold legacy media's feet to the fire? I just can't see pulling the wool from over the voters' eyes without the media returning to actual journalism. They have to fail financially. I mean, you're doing it by subscribing to our show. I mean, if you pull a subscription from the Seattle Times, eventually, if you are not financially solvent, you have to change something. And surely, I mean, money at the end of the day is what matters because you can't exist without money. I mean, for us too, like the work we're doing, I think is really important, but if we weren't able to make a living off it, we couldn't do it. We'd have to go get other jobs. So, you know, to a greater extent, an entity like the Seattle Times, if they are destitute, maybe that's what it takes for them to finally wake up. And, you know, TV ratings have been plummeting in recent years, plummeting local TV news ratings. So I don't know at what point that's a wake up for them, that people want them to be fair. You know, and that's not the entire reason that TV ratings are plummeting. There's also, they've just really failed to embrace new media. They failed to, and even when I was in TV news, there was this hesitancy to really embrace, you know, people's move towards social media and all the different ways they wanted to get information. They were so stuck to this old model of TV. So I don't know, if they don't get their act together and they're insolvent, maybe that's the only way we can really truly hold their feet to the fire. Michelle Seberg, and you just got to tell them, write your emails, write your posts and comments on their stuff and let them know why a story just doesn't quite meet your expectations. Politely, firmly, but politely. Michelle Seberg, the appellate court judge should recuse herself, but it's unlikely. Yeah, I don't see her doing that. Rick Johnson, only in Washington state do we take a problem such as affordable housing and make it 10 times worse by taxing the hell out of everyone. Insanity defined. I agree. Rachel Cisneros, this is more than insane. It's downright criminal, not to mention evil. I assume you're talking about what happened with Timothy Pawley. Eric Lakey, we the voters need to start removing these corrupt politicians by any means necessary. Legal means, but, you know, we need to start to wake people up. Don McEwen, I am not convinced voters did this. I am more convinced the mail-in crooked voting system did. I understand people believe that. I do believe our voting system needs a little bit of assistance. I don't think we're ever going to go back to in-person voting. But it also, to me, is, I hear that a lot from Republicans. But if Republicans want to focus solely on, like, it's not us, it's the voting system, I don't think you're going to win anytime soon, because it's about reaching the right voters with the right message, putting the hard work in on the ground, making sure your ground game and all of that is good. And the fact is, Democrats have a far better ground game in this state than Republicans do. Not even close. I mean, they can get more people to a Tesla dealership to protest than we can get parents to Olympia to stand up for their rights as parents. So when you look at it like that, I mean, people have to want to get involved.
I also think that it distracts and deters some Republicans from voting. They say, oh, they're going to win anyway. And then they don't vote. And I think that was a big problem in this election. I talked to people that said my vote doesn't matter as a Republican in Washington. And I'm like, yeah, well, keep up that messaging. Keep telling people their vote doesn't matter and they won't show up.
Yeah, I don't think it's productive.
I don't think that's a good idea.
I'm not saying don't work toward it, but if you can't acknowledge the deficiencies in the ground game and the fundraising. I mean, I go to a lot of Republican fundraisers that I speak at. The fundraising is lackluster, just to put it mildly. And then people want to complain, and I get it. Times are tough, you know, but Democrats have a ton of money. Danny S., we need a bad portrait of the Don here in Washington State. Maybe then he'll notice we exist.
It's true.
Exactly.
We're getting nothing. We're getting nothing from him.
But you know what I saw that I was going to put on the show today? I totally forgot. Let me just come on. I just got to find it really quick. So Clay Travis, who's with, he's the Outkick.com founder, like sports guy. He tweeted this out. So he was with Donald Trump at the NCAA Wrestling Championship. Yes. He said, I asked Donald Trump what's on his sports bucket list after already attending the Super Bowl, Daytona 500, and NCAA Wrestling. He says, U.S. hosting the World Cup in 2026 and the Olympics in 2028. He worked to get both during his first term. Now he gets to attend both as president. Seattle is a host city for the World Cup. So what if Donald Trump came to Seattle for a World Cup game? Now, what I said on social media is I actually don't want him to, unless we can round up Antifa by then and put them in Guantanamo. Because can you imagine the riots if Donald Trump came to Seattle?
At least he'd be paying attention then.
At least he'd be paying attention. But I don't know. So maybe that would be a good thing. It's like, get Donald Trump here. Get the Antifa all in one place at one time. And then round them up and put them on those deportation flights to Guantanamo, even if they're American citizens. All right, we need to make sure they're a terrorist organization. I'm only half kidding. Hi, Brandy and Nicole. I'm a teacher here in Washington, one of the good ones, I promise. And my union is pushing us to sign in pro on a bill to clarify contradictions between the Parents' Bill of Rights and state and federal laws. Generally, I do the opposite of what they're pushing, but on this one, I'd like a little more clarification. The Dems are so sneaky in what they're doing that I don't want to get behind the wrong side of this. As a teacher, I just want to show up, teach my kids how to read, write, and generally just be good human beings. None of this other stuff is my job, and I'm tired of it falling on my shoulders. I shouldn't have to keep track of who I can or can't discuss certain topics with, or who goes by what name in which place. Thank you for all the hard work, Jill. So I would need to see exactly what bill they're asking you to sign in, but I imagine it's 5181.
Oh, I believe it is. It's I think that they're phrasing it as, oh, it's just for the clarification. Yep.
If it's 1296, or 5181, then they are lying through their teeth, and this is about upending parental rights. This is about keeping secrets from parents. If it's not one of those two, Jill, email us and tell us what it is. I'll look into it for you. But I agree with you that if the WEA is telling you to do it, if the teachers' union is telling you to do it, a sane person should probably do the opposite. I think that's probably the rule that would be safe to go by. Okay, let's see. Did I get to all the ones I wanted to get to? Yes, I did. All right, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. How long before a Tesla owner is killed? I'm actually shocked it hasn't happened yet. So we've seen this increased escalation against Tesla owners. There was this video. I need to share it because it's by the Sephora I go to all the time in Issaquah Commons, where this really regular looking lady, like middle-aged lady, gets out of her car and keys a Tesla. And I'm like, in Issaquah, regular old looking suburban mom. I'm like, you guys have lost your minds. But there was this really scary story in the Seattle area. This is Fox 13 News, right? Where a guy in camouflage, face covered, stops a Tesla on the highway and gets out and confronts them. Terrifying. Here's a report.
Lee was on the way to a doctor's appointment in Linwood Wednesday morning when she says all of a sudden a driver behind her just laid on the horn as they came up to a red light. Things spiraled out of control when a white SUV followed her and cut her off, stopping in the middle of the road.
Gets out and walks straight up to my door window. So I crack my window and I said, what is the problem? And he goes, you need to sell your car. This is a Nazi car. You're driving it. You need to sell your car.
Lee says she's been driving a Tesla for the last 2 years. She says a man wearing a camouflage jacket and a ski mask attacked her for it.
It's really sad, like, that this is what's happening to people who, honestly, it doesn't affect how I believe or what I believe. Just the car I drive.
Yeah, but honestly, I hope that that impacts what she believes. Because I took that to think that she, you know, doesn't support Donald Trump or whatever it is, but to me, first of all, somebody is going to die. And these are the same people. The people vandalizing Teslas are the people who vandalized the Starbucks stores and the Amazon stores during Occupy. They're the people who burned cop cars in the streets during the BLM movement and the riots. These are the people who will find whatever the issue of the moment is, and they will protest over it, and they'll riot over it, and they'll hurt people and property over it. But to go to the length of stopping someone on the highway and getting out and confronting them, someone is going to die. But I do hope that for some of these Tesla owners, because Tesla has always been electric vehicles, like, those have been vehicles owned by the left. So hopefully for some of them, this will wake them up to the insanity of this faction of the left and what has become acceptable for them and will change the way they vote in the future. It's just horrifying stuff. That has been your closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Check out, again, our episode of Sundays with Subscribers. You can become a subscriber on the show by signing up at undividedpod.com. Just click on Support the Show. You just hit the little red box that says Support the Show for $5. We make it super easy. And we are a fan-funded show, and that's how we continue to do this. Gosh, what else? I think that's it. Yeah? Cool. Okay. All right. TTYL. That means talk to you later for all you boomers out there. I'm hip. Hip and young. No?
Oh. Cool. TTYL. I guess so. No? I feel like that's like 20 years ago.
It is, but that's fine. Okay. I'm stuck in the early 2000s. Yeah.